Chapter 30 Rebirth. I awakened in his old bed, strapped in place by a light blanket. It had been placed there for my safety. There are many muscular tremors through which one must suffer on the way back, and they wanted to keep me from battering myself against the wall. I could not recall these tremors, not personally. She explained it all to me once I could speak again. But before explanations could be had, sight was first required. I hadn't any, or rather, let me say, I lacked the ability to open my eyes. I could feel them, just. I experienced my body as a remote stranger, a sound barely heard, a smell scarcely remembered, as if my mind and body had been separated by the distance of several kilometers and could only communicate through remote and unreliable means. I did not feel the blanket draped upon my naked form. I felt another man's perception of coolness over skin, and understood the vessel was not quite ready. As soon as I thought this, the world erupted in my mind as a thin slice of white haze. She'd put a thumb to my brow and lifted.
"You're back," she said.
I was incapable of responding.
What about your eye? Can you move it? There! Was that it? Do it again to prove that wasn't a reflex. Excellent. The seizures should be over now. I'm going to remove the restraining sheet. If you get your limbs back before I return, just try to be careful, all right? You shouldn't be able to hurt yourself in here, but on the other hand, you've proven yourself a man of many talents.
When her thumb went away, it took the world with it.
Mr. Room has your vitals on monitor, so I'll be back as soon as you show signs of ambulation. Do you remember waking up before? You had quite a bit to say when you were out of your mind.
I was still incapable of responding.
No matter. There's time for that later. See if you can remember any of it, though, all right? I'd like to know what's in there and what isn't so far.
I listened to her leave with a stranger's ears. I was never able to remember. The next thing I can recall is walking. I was held up on either side by drones. Their distortion fields were inactive so that I could actually see them. Gleaming silver bodies and white hollow faces. Gentle hands. We were in a special room shaped like a wagon wheel stood straight up, just a large tube, really. It seemed always to curve upward out of sight, and they walked me along the corridor, following the curve. I kept thinking we'd eventually reach the wall, but we didn't. No matter how far we walked along the wheel, we did so always upon the floor. I must have been far out of sorts, because it took much longer than it should have for me to understand why.
"This place," I wheezed. Like Erda?"
The drone on the right swiveled his head toward mine, and through a voice neither male nor female said,
"Very good. What else can you say about it?"
"Not much. Not much. Barely say a damned thing."
Every word a tremendous labor. The drone nodded. His face lacked the geometric traceries of the untethered, and I distrusted him.
"You must relearn to breathe as you must relearn to walk. You are certain this place brings no other ideas to mind?"
"At first, I thought we should have fallen back to the floor."
Oh, God, stop a moment. Stop, I can't."
They laid me down on the floor, where I gasped like a fish pulled from water.
"Better?"
"No,"
I gasped.
"No, I can't breathe. Can't breathe."
He raised a silver hand. Almost immediately, the crushing weight upon my chest lessened. Soon I was able to breathe without labor, and shortly after, my body rested against the floor gently, contacting only along the hip and shoulder, as if I floated in a pool.
"Now?"
"Much better," I sighed.
"You must relearn to breathe as you must relearn to walk. You are sure this place brings no other ideas to mind?"
A moment, can't you? Can't you give me a goddamn moment?
They stood over me, staring. I didn't mind it at first, but after some time passed, those empty sockets made me uneasy. I wanted to tell them to turn away. They would have done it, too, but I didn't say anything. It didn't matter what they did, where they stood, or how much space they gave me. Eventually, they'd come back for me. She'd given them a job, and they were going to see it finished no matter what. They'd keep coming back. Like a cancer.
You were asking about ideas, I began.
Yes.
Well, I was saying that I originally thought we'd only be able to walk a little ways before we hit the wall. Or the floor would become the wall, you know what I mean. I figured we'd walk into it a bit before just falling backward. But then we walked for a long time. I realized we'd just keep walking, and then I started thinking about Erda, or Talon, too. I guess they must operate along the same principle. Then I wondered why I hadn't understood that from the beginning, when you first brought me to this place. I should have just understood we'd be able to walk around the whole thing. Why would I think any differently?
I understand, the drone agreed. Do you have any idea why you made that mistake?
I shrugged.
I think it comes down to scale. This place is pretty small. The floor disappears into the ceiling only a few meters ahead. Erda is large enough that you don't really notice it curving over itself unless you really look. It's so huge you just accept all of it at once. You can't reconcile a piece of it. You have to take all of it. You take all of it, or maybe you go a little crazy living in a tube, a giant erdoscope. This place, it's tiny. I've seen buildings that could contain it. I guess you don't expect to see such a small space behave like an entire world.
You are speaking of gravity, of course.
Sure.
But this is not gravity we are dealing with.
A watery, squirming unease wormed into my mind, and I looked away.
No.
We are certain that if you think on it more, you will find the words.
I felt it within me, wedging itself between the folds.
Centrifugal force, I muttered.
The drones both straightened and looked away from me.
Just so, said the one who did the speaking.
Why do I know that word? I'm certain I've never heard it before.
Why do you know what a meter is?
Asked the other drone. I thought about that, but had no answer. She put her hand in mine and said,
Squeeze.
I did. I looked at her fingernails, fascinated.
Harder, please.
This isn't hard.
She pulled back, and her hand slipped easily away.
Oh, I said.
Patience, it will come. Now, take my hand again.
I did.
And squeeze?
How's that?
Getting there.
I shook my head.
Your fingertips have not changed color. It's like I'm an old man.
There's more strength in you than you realize. You're not withered. You're forming nerve pathways.
I looked at her.
Nerve pathways.
Her eyes widened.
Yes?
It reminds me of something.
What is it?
I can't. It's too much. I can't give it words.
I squeezed my eyes shut and moaned.
I can't. It's images. Thousands of images. I can't stop them.
Calm. Breathe slowly, she warned. Try to grab one.
I can't. They're too fast.
I felt my spine bend under the assault. My eyes were jammed shut, yet I could still see. 1 million sights and shapes and people and worlds and colors I could not understand. An endless onslaught of words and ideas crashing upon me until my body trembled in imagined pain.
Calm, Udo. Try to snatch up one image. Listen to me. Listen carefully. Central nervous system.
The flood ceased immediately, as if those three simple words had been a rope cast out to a drowning man, as I had certainly been. At first, they conjured only a blackness within me, but soon after, I saw sparks of blue traveling along jagged bifurcate pathways like lightning. The wailing thing inside of me soon supplied the words.
"Electrochemical signaling," I whispered.
"You're back?" she asked.
"I am. Thank you. How?"
"There is much up in that head that wasn't there before. Like the rest of yourself, you will need to learn how to use and control it."
I said nothing.
"Udo?"
"I'm thinking of neurons. It's so strange. Like learning for the first time something I've always known. It's like deja vu. French. French is a language. I know French. Je peux parler français."
"Focus, please."
"Neurons. The brain."
I struggled to pull the words from the ideas parading around inside of me.
"Quantum receptors. No, that's not what that means. Quantum. The entire framework operates on a quantum basis."
I bent again under the strain of an idea flood that threatened to carry me away.
"Stay with me," she whispered. "What does the word quantum mean?"
"Nothing. Nothing at all."
"Oh?
It's a trendy word some scientist dreamt up to describe functions he didn't understand. If you give me a moment, I think I'll have his name."
"Why are you thinking about it?"
"I don't know. I don't know where any of this is coming from."
"Open your eyes."
I did as she asked. I saw a field of shining brown skin crossed in a hairline topography, a wrinkle here and there. I'd pressed my forehead against her knuckles thoughtlessly. When I pulled back, I saw that the fingers had gone a sickly shade of white and released her.
"I hurt you. Did I hurt you?"
She smiled.
"No, it's all right."
She showed me the palm and flexed the fingers.
"See?"
I took her hand up in both of my own and turned it, rubbed the back with my thumb, bumped the pad of my thumb off the diamond. With her free hand, she brushed the backs of her fingers down my cheek, and I could not help but lean into the feeling. My eyes closed again. It was like swimming in cold waters, both good and painful.
"Born and Heisenberg. Pauli and Africa."
"What?"
"People with skin like yours. They came from Africa."
I opened my eyes again and saw her smiling.
"That is true."
"You did not come from Africa."
She shook her head.
"These eyes have never seen Africa, nor the world that held it."
I waited for more ideas to come, then.
"That place, it makes the skin dark, living there. This is possible? The place people live changes their appearance?"
"It may."
"How?"
"Just wait," she smiled. "It's all in there. All that's needed is the time to organize it."
I held my hands beside hers and looked at them together.
"I think I would love to find a place that changed my appearance."
She laughed.
"You have."
I did not know what to say to that.
"There is more?"
she asked.
"Other questions?"
"I don't know,"
I whispered. I was staring at my hand, flexing the fingers in and out, trying to make a fist. I couldn't do it for some reason. My thumb always ended up enclosed inside of my fingers. After a few attempts, she gestured to the hand and advised me to think about my fingers first. My thumb ended up in the right place on the following contraction.
"I don't know how long I've been here," I said, "but I should have been hungry by now. Certainly thirsty. Have I been fed while I'm out?"
"No."
"Well, I should have been hungry. I haven't had to, you know, relieve myself. I haven't had to do that either. I stood to the chair a few times and waited, but nothing. I don't think that part of me works anymore."
"Oh, it would if you wished it. If you ate or drank. If you wanted to know a woman, well, that is also within your grasp."
"Huh.
Do you wish to know a woman?"
"I don't know. No. It seems, I don't know, seems a small thing."
She settled back and balanced her elbow on a knee. I was able to see her, but only just. There was still difficulty in moving. Had my back not been propped up, I would have flopped over.
"It is a small thing," she said, "though not for humans."
I thought about that. Do gods love?
Of course.
But do they love physically?
She
made a gesture with her hand that I did not understand.
Say rather that we love ethereally.
I know that word, but I don't understand your intent in using it.
She placed a finger upon my brow and said,
"All love happens here. The physical apparatus that goes along with it may be pleasant, but is ultimately not a requirement. People refer to making love. Just a moment ago, we described the act as a condition of knowing. There's a great deal of weight in that word, knowing. A god's true nature is not encapsulated in the physical, Udo. We transcend that limitation. When two gods come together, not the primary and an aspect now, but two separate entities, we know each other. And that knowledge is absolute. Perhaps it doesn't sound as rewarding to you as the act of sex, but I promise you, it is profound."
"It sounds like a nightmare to me," I said.
"Why?"
"Absolute knowledge? You'd have access to every dirty little thought or urge in each other's mind. You'd see the true darkness of the other's soul."
"That is a human concern," she said, waving the idea away with a hand.
"Love is a human concern, and so is the ugliness within us. We learn to lie, to hide certain things from each other, because that is the only way we can function together."
"Yes, and at a certain point along your development, you'll no longer be ruled by the hormonal processes within your bodies, and such things will become less of a concern. What an odd species. You continue to interest and surprise me all the time. You act as though you have absolute control over your own thoughts and ideas. Meanwhile, 100 different images parade unbidden across the mind's invisible canvas. Tell me, from where do these images originate? What gives them rise?"
"I don't know."
"And so how could you be held accountable?"
"But such thoughts," I shuddered.
"Such thoughts? Such as what?"
Something about the disbelief in her tone annoyed me. I felt as though I was being dismissed and decided, quite childishly, that I wanted to shock her.
"There's a memory in here somewhere. Some time ago, never mind when, there was a body in an alley. Older woman, likely what they called a lurker. That's a horse so low they won't put her up in a brothel anymore, even the cheap ones."
"I'm aware of the word."
"Very well. In this memory, a man happens by her and realizes she hasn't been cooling very long. No odor, no bloating. Her mouth had fallen open, and he noticed she was missing nearly all her teeth. Just a few of the molars remained. The gums were smooth, no sockets or blood, so the back alley barbers hadn't been at her for dentures. And she'd just naturally lost her teeth along the way at some point, and he thought about that. He thought about how the whores in the brothels would sometimes take a cock into their mouth for enough money and wondered if he could find a toothless whore. Looking at her gums, he thought a mouth without teeth would be a very fine thing to slide into. Then he searched her body for money and left her there, forgotten."
"I understand," she said.
Her expression hadn't changed, and I was a little put out.
"Well, that's a horrible thing," I said. "Most people on learning such a thing would want nothing to do with the thought's originator."
"It was an unwanted thought that took hold in a moment of mental trauma, Udo. That pile of misfiring cells jammed into the human skull is a jumbled riot. Such allows for near fantastic leaps of insight, but it comes with a great deal of baggage, too. It is chemistry facilitated by wet and sloppy biology. There's a great deal of waste involved, the result of which is usually confusion and shame. They are prisoners of their own mechanology, and we would hardly hold that against them."
"The gods are not typically the ones humans must hide themselves from."
She nodded.
"That is true. The only point I'm really making here is that humans cannot and should not join together so completely. Humans. The gods are different.
And what am I? Human or god?
You are something in between.
Yes, you keep calling me Udo. It seems like a stranger's name. I feel a doubleness in me, Irpisha. I feel as though I'm wearing a body not my own. I recall his memories.
They will integrate.
When I looked at her, she had four arms, each folded upon the other in a state of calm repose. I blinked in surprise, shook my head. When I looked again, she had only two.